and welcome back to A Virtual View. Today, I'm joined by Alice Teal, an associate clinical professor at Ohio State University. Alice, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a clinician. I've been a nurse for more than 40 years and a nurse practitioner for more than 25 years. And primarily, my clinical background is in adolescent and college health. I'm also a teacher. I've been an educator for more than 30 years. My teaching experience includes directing the online family nurse practitioner program. And I'm a director now of graduate wellness academic programming at Ohio State College of Nursing. I've done that for 5 years, and that role requires me or offers me the opportunity to integrate wellness into our academic courses and curricula and support faculty who are doing the same.
Well, I'm really excited to talk more about that and really get into that because academics, mental health, all that's very, very close to my heart. So I'm excited to talk about that. But first, let's talk about how did you initially become involved or interested in telehealth?
So I anticipated you were going to ask me this question, Danielle. And yeah. So I started thinking, when did that happen? And I actually started teaching online, the graduate students in 2010. And so my role included assessing and evaluating their clinical skills from a distance. And the question I always had, other than relying on the feedback from the clinicians who are working with them, which is really important, but I also wanted to be able to give them feedback about their skills. And so we started looking at innovative ways to use our web conferencing platforms and ways to really do evaluation of clinical skills in virtual environments. So at about 2010, mm-hmm. Wasn't about so much how do we provide care in an online or in a virtual way, but how can I assess what my students are doing? So I've been interested in telehealth skills for students for more than a decade. The first time that we had students assess and manage a standardized patient from a distance was 2012.
Okay.
And our first national presentation was in 2015. We called it cyber teaching, cyber learning, and now cyber evaluation. And so we had to, we were asking students to log in and talk to, get a history, and assess a patient from a distance. So it's almost been about 10 years.
Yeah, so you are one of the pre-COVID telehealth pioneers.
Yes.
That's awesome.
My claim to fame here.
Yeah, and we do find that there is such a difference between having an appointment in person and having an appointment via telehealth. And I feel like during COVID, a lot of clinicians thought they could just pick up their iPhone and turn on FaceTime and are like, this is the same, but very clearly it isn't.
No. Yeah. No, there's just a few things that you need to know with all of that, right?
Just a few. Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk more about that. You've worked in telehealth and in this sort of digital health space for a long time and in a couple different ways. Could you tell me more about that?
Again, the majority of my work in telehealth was leading the integration of telehealth in the nurse practitioner curricula. So around the time that I was talking about, Ohio State partnered with a digital health solutions company. So what we did was we got a telehealth kiosk. It was really very exciting, right? And this huge kiosk in the basement of our college, but it allowed us this opportunity to teach people cases and have them be standardized patients. So our distance students could then practice this skill set. So that was kind of my first entry into this in a more formal way. And then we had one of those kiosks at our nurse practitioner-led total health and wellness clinic. And we actually used that kiosk as a way to provide primary care to the students, faculty, and staff at our rural extension campuses. Come a long way from our kiosk, but it gave us that ability to really better understand it because we were awesome. We were teaching it while we were also learning to implement it ourselves.
Right. That's so interesting to me that you started off with this kiosk for like training purposes, and then it became something you were using like clinically for your distance students. That's that's a really cool transition, I think.
It was an interesting time, right? It was a lot of fun. And I do think, again, part of this is you are right when you're talking about like how different it is. Like you can't just like do telehealth in exactly the same way. Like, how do you take a history? How do you know what's going on in the background? Like all of those kinds of things, even the problem solving of the technology, right? Were things that I think we learned by doing at that point.
So in addition to that, what are some more like important lessons that you learned throughout that process? I'd like to hear more about that.
Sure. I think the first lesson, and anybody who's done telehealth would probably tell you the same thing. The first lesson is recognizing that you will have to problem solve technology. Like that's the first lesson. I mean, I do appreciate that we've advanced beyond the kiosks, but still always having a backup plan for when that's not working, you know, when you can't reach the person, when you can't see them on the camera. I think the second lesson was really being intentional about providing students the opportunity to really practice, to learn that practice. Obviously, since the pandemic, the use of telehealth has changed and has expanded, and we're learning so much more about best practices. So now it's really becoming an integral part of the curriculum. And people having the opportunity to practice before they have to actually begin providing care. And, you know, we don't need them to necessarily learn the hard way like we did.
Right. And I think those sort of lessons learned and that background that you had in place prior to the pandemic, those lessons were, I'm sure, extremely useful for folks who were going into the whole telehealth landscape blind. Because there were so many people like that who are like, I have no experience. I have no training. I need to look at what's out there already so I can provide effective care for my patients in the only way I really can right now.
Right. Right. So I think our students did have, especially our recent graduates, they'd already had that experience. So they knew things like, you know, establishing, like, actually talking about confidentiality and looking at, you know, what was the setting that they were in when they were starting to take a history and kind of really understanding all of those really best practice components, they were ready to do it. So, you know, we really, that was for them certainly an advantage.
Right.
Not that we weren't still certainly learning.
And now that the sort of healthcare landscape is a little bit more accepting or aware of telehealth in general, do you expect this to be sort of standard par for the course in clinician training going forward for there to be like a telehealth module?
Yeah, I think it will be. I think that even knowing like the regulatory part, right, like the legislative regulatory part, the policy part, I think that sometimes what's happened now that it's expanded is, again, we still think students will know. And think they can just, you know, be anywhere and provide care everywhere. And so I think it will be standard. I think some of the things that are maybe different or unique that sometimes educators haven't quite thought through are how can you offer students an experience in trying this before they're in the clinical setting, you know, or before they're actually, in other words, working with patients.
Like,
how can you give them that sort of experiential learning so they feel a lot more prepared?
Right, right. I think that's really valuable and really important. So one of the areas you've done some work in that I find really interesting is provider well-being. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
We have an epidemic of clinician burnout. It was a problem prior to the pandemic, and the pandemic just exacerbated the problem. When we look at rates of anxiety, depression, stress, burnout in clinicians and nurses, nurse practitioners, physicians, I mean, we know that there is a problem. So sort of the reason that this became even more important to me is that our graduate students have the stress of being a clinician in addition to the stress of being students.
Oh, man.
So we're seeing higher rates of anxiety, depression, stress, and burnout in our graduate students than even that we see in practicing clinicians. And then we're preparing them, you know, for a while by saying, oh, you know, there's high levels of burnout in this profession that you're preparing to be a part of. Well, that's not very encouraging, right?
Yeah.
And so this became for us a really key piece that was foundational to their learning. Like, how do you care for yourself while you're caring for others? How do you create and improve wellness in the environment where you're going to be working? In other words, how can you be a part of a culture that really values you?
And I really like that you put the emphasis on wellness, not just health, because somebody can be physically healthy, but obviously they're not well if they're suffering from working something like a 50, 60 hour week. And then on top of that, they're also a student. Yeah. So that sort of emphasis on that provider well-being, I think, is really important.
Well, and as providers, we tend to be self-sacrificing,
right?
We tend to focus on others more than ourselves. And then graduate students as well tend to sacrifice themselves, right? Like, I did everything else I needed to do today. Now I'm going to stay up and not sleep because I have other things that I have to do for school. So integrating wellness actually into our courses, like doing check-ins when we start a class or taking a wellness break partway through a class and really finding out, like, you know, are you doing okay today?
Right. Because I'm sure if you have a group of extremely overtaxed students who are graduating, you're not setting them up for success in their career field.
It makes it harder for them to learn.
Right.
So then they develop self-doubt, right? Mm-hmm. The big imposter syndrome, like, do I really know what I need to know? And then when they get into practice, then they can get easily overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Right. Versus being really ready for it, having the tools, valuing your own self-care. And what my doctoral work was looking at when you teach nurse practitioners to coach wellness, right? Like, the other thing we have to do is work with people to support their wellness, right? So If we teach our students to be well and to coach others in their wellness, does it matter? So we looked at 5 years after completing the nurse practitioner program and to see, like, did they find this helpful? And they had higher levels of wellness and they were able to coach wellness and value wellness for others.
That's really good to hear. And it goes along with that maxim that you always hear on airplanes. It's like, put your own mask on before putting on the mask of anyone next to you, because they can't teach wellness effectively and encourage their patients to be well if they're not doing it themselves, I would imagine.
The other piece to this is it's very hard to be well if you work in a toxic environment, right? So there's a part you want the clinician to learn to support themselves. There's also a part that we want our students to understand, to be able to look at where they are going to work and be able to identify, is this an organization that supports wellness for me, for my patients, right? And then we want to also teach our future leaders how to create an organization that is well.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that change can't just come from the individual. It's got to happen on the institutional level, because you can encourage these future providers, like, practice wellness, make sure you take days off, like make sure you're not, like, doing too much. But if you have an organization or an employer that really doesn't support that, then there's no way that they can be successful.
Right. If your employer says, yeah, you can take days off, but not today, not this week, not for the wedding, you know, not for all the things that matter to you, then no amount of taking deep breaths and taking time for yourself is going to make that better.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I think needs to be modeled by everyone in the organization from leadership on down. Because if you have leadership saying you can take off as many days as you want, and then they work every day, work every weekend, or always in the office, obviously your providers are going to have issues trying to strive for wellness themselves if they're not seeing that modeled.
There's a direct impact on patient outcomes when clinicians aren't well.
Right.
So what the evidence shows is that when we're not well as clinicians, then our patients actually have less wellness, and we're more likely to have a medical error. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about telehealth in this space. Is telehealth a viable tool for ensuring or promoting provider well-being at all?
The short answer is yes, 100%.
Good.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's really helpful to combine what the student has to learn in terms of telehealth skills with them actually supporting other students and their wellness. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is this: students can actually provide wellness support to other students using like web conferencing. And in doing that, they're actually learning telehealth skills. So for example, let's say you're a new graduate student. It's really stressful. You don't really understand how to register for courses. You aren't sleeping well. What we've done is sometimes paired students who are further along with that student. And maybe three or four times during a semester, they will connect by web conferencing, and the student who's further along can coach wellness for the student who's new. And so what that does is it provides this wellness partnering and this wellness support that's really foundational to their learning, but we do it virtually so they can also learn these telehealth skills, right? So they learn how to have really therapeutic communication. They learn coaching skills. They learn actually this interaction. And it's not so much that, you know, people don't understand web conferencing or Zoom or any of that, but it's using it now. It's about using it in a professional way. Like, how do I do this? Looking at my surroundings, using communication skills in a way that I can actually have an impact. And so we've used telehealth technologies as a platform for students to actually support other students, alumni, and nurses in improving their wellness.
That's really innovative, I think. And it really helps to, or I would imagine, it would really help to promote that culture of wellness like across mm-hmm. different cohorts. Because you have your older students, your alumni saying, this worked for me. And if you put that emphasis on provider wellness, I think that's an awesome way to combine teaching telehealth skills in like our air quotes website manner with right. ensuring that your future colleagues, your fellow healthcare professionals are taking care of themselves. So I really like that.
One of the things that I wanted to mention is we did this in a more formal way at the beginning of the pandemic. We worked with a traveling nurse agency who had nurses who were very stressed in COVID-19 hotspots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our students were out of the clinical sites, right? They weren't, because of the shortages of PPE and for a lot of reasons early in the pandemic, our students weren't actually in clinical sites getting clinical hours. So we used this approach that we had been using, and we had our graduate nursing students partnering with stressed nurses who were providing care in COVID hotspots and coaching them in their wellness. And they got clinical hours for that. And what we found, we did do an evaluation of that, and we found that 97% of the nurses in COVID-19 hotspots said that it made a difference in decreasing their stress and in preventing their burnout.
That's incredible. That's a really great idea.
Well, thank you. It students wanted to feel a part, like they wanted to do something that was mm-hmm. meaningful. So I have to give a lot of credit to the team who said, yeah, let's figure out a way to do this and let's do this partnering. But the students were fantastic in that.
Yeah, I'm from state government originally, and I was part of our state's COVID response. And so I saw firsthand the burden that mm-hmm. that put on providers, just that whole span of time. And I feel like a lot of them didn't have any sort of external support, particularly not from people who were trained and who understood in a sense what they were mm-hmm. going through. So that kind of support, I think, is really invaluable.
Well, and Danielle, many of our graduate students, again, are already practicing nurses.
Right.
So the other beauty of it was, you know, some of our students were practicing at the time. Mm-hmm. And so they understood it to the core of who they are. So it really became, for that particular version of this, like, wellness partnering we've done, it really became nurses helping nurses.
And I think that's so important mm-hmm. because you can offer empathy, you can try and listen, but if you're not part of that particular line of work, it's hard to really understand, I think, mm-hmm. what those folks are going through.
you know, this is just so true of any clinician who's really experiencing stress or trauma or burnout. They also don't want to overburden their friends or their family.
Right.
Not that our friends or family wouldn't care or wouldn't try to understand. They certainly would. But it's this extra piece of not wanting to overburden them that we saw.
Right. And a part of wellness is maintaining a healthy and supportive, like, social life and social circle. And that can be hard to do if you're constantly having to go to the people around you to cope with what's happening to you in the workplace.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, let's move on a little bit from this very interesting but sometimes upsetting topic.
It's interesting for me because I have combined what I do with wellness with telehealth for quite a while now. So I'm a co-author of an evidence-based assessment textbook. The second chapter of that textbook is assessing your own wellness, so that even in doing assessment, you should really be checking in with yourself, knowing where you are before you start even doing an assessment of others. And in that same textbook, we talk about then in another chapter, like how you actually then do assessment by telehealth.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. Why is it so important to include those best practices for using telehealth technologies for assessment? Why is that something that it's important to codify, to write down, to provide education about?
Right. Because I think that so many people are doing such good work and publishing results that it's really important that we look at that evidence and we are able to document what that evidence is so that it can inform future practice. Mm-hmm. Like, so again, it's not just, we don't want the students to have to relearn, right, the hard way what we've learned. But again, when you're doing that kind of piece where you're pulling in to a textbook the evidence of the outcomes of what people have seen, I think it just gives it great weight. And so this way, students learn, like, the benefits, the limitations, the legislative and regulatory considerations, and then simple best practice, right? Like website manner or etiquette, communication, kind of the other piece that's important to learn is like the how-to of the physical exam. So we teach students two really important things with this. So much of a person's diagnosis is in their history. So like how to ask really key questions and to really, with that history taking, really be able to do the diagnostic decision making. But the other piece we teach is, and it's you know, that we want in textbook information is, so how do you do a physical exam by telehealth? There's nothing, you can't do a physical exam by telehealth because you certainly can. Right? You're looking at all kinds of, like, your observational skills are so important, but you can also have patients assist with the physical exam, right? Mm-hmm. Like, tell me if your lymph node is tender. Can you touch a lymph node? Does it feel swollen to you? Like, in kind of guiding a person or guiding a patient through physical exam, we know so much more about that as well. So I think what it's doing is giving health science students a much stronger and deeper foundation for practice.
And why is it so important that it's someone like you who does have practical experience to be helping in guiding these future clinicians?
Well, I do think students benefit when educators bring their clinical experience into teaching and learning.
I'd agree.
They get a deeper understanding of a variety of clinical experiences is what it is. And everybody brings their experience into practice. And more than that, they're able to actually give them real scenarios of what they might expect. And so, you know, when I talk about students needing experiential learning before they start practice, that's the part they're drawing from. What are the examples that my faculty gave me about what to expect? You know, what were some of the situations that were totally unanticipated? Like, how do I talk to someone who I'm doing a telehealth visit and I'm realizing they're ordering coffee? You know, like, just like scenarios that are just like too true, right? And so they benefit from that versus practice in an environment where they're not actually imagining that those things can happen. And then when they go to practice, they're like, oh no, we're supposed to be getting permission for this visit. I'm not sure they're paying attention, or I hear noise in the background and I'm not sure what to do. Mm-hmm. So to me, that kind of clinical experience sharing makes such a big difference.
Right. So can you tell me a little bit about the telehealth wellness hub, what that is?
Sure. That's the telehealth wellness hub is the name, the sort of virtual umbrella of all of the initiatives that combined both wellness and telehealth at Ohio State University College of Nursing. So that wellness partner program that I talked about, where the students partnered with nurses, we've done various initiatives of that, where the students partnered with other students, where the students partnered with alumni. We've also had undergraduate students doing a wellness assessments of other undergraduate students and then talking to them about what the assessments found. And so all of those initiatives are under the umbrella of the telehealth wellness hub. And in that regard, we can have students, first of all, really learn to value their own wellness and talk about wellness while they're learning the skills of actually implementing care by telehealth.
Right. So they're getting something out of it, but they're also getting education, which is so important.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and chatting with me about wellness and telehealth. Very important topics that I was excited to get an opportunity to hear more about from you.
Thank you for listening to A Virtual View. You can find more information about today's episode in the show notes below. If you would like to support our podcast, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Do you have any questions or topics you'd like us to discuss? If so, contact us at info@umtrc.org or through the form found in the show notes. Also, we'd like to give a special thanks to our editor, Tristan Yoder. Finally, a special thanks to the Health Resources and Service Administration, also known as HRSA. Our podcast series, A Virtual View, is sponsored in part by HRSA's Telehealth Resource Center program, which is under HRSA's Office of the Administrator and the Office for the Advancement of Telehealth. The content and conclusions of this podcast are those of the UMTRC and should not be construed as the official policy of, or the position of, nor should any endorsements be inferred by HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government. Thanks for listening and have a great day.